Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hi, guys. Jason here. I want to tell you about Wink.com. W-I-N-C. It's a great way to discover new wine if you don't know a bunch about wine. Basically, all you do is go to their website, fill out a survey based on your flavors, what you're into, what you're not into, and they ship personalized selections right to your door. They start at just $13 a bottle. You get to come home to a box that's been customized just for you, and then you can start chugging ASAP. There's no membership fees. You can cancel anytime if you want to skip a month because you're out of town or because you don't have money. No problem. Shipping is covered. If you don't like the bottle, they'll replace it with one you love today. Even if you use wink.com/thestew, you get $20 off your first shipment. Try wink.com, TRYWINC.com/thestew, and you get to support us over here at the pod, and we can keep delivering you great episodes to your door every week. Enjoy the show. I said, what you know
about it? It's the stew, baby.
Got the mise en place.
Young stew, baby.
And the room a lot.
Hello, hello. You're listening to The Stew. I'm Jason Stewart. Andre Conaparo, say hello.
Hello.
We're here with one guest today, Thomas Raquel. Just kidding.
Thanks Thomas, for coming.
Thomas Raquel. Yep.
We got a heavy hitter.
We got a big name on the pod today. Big name. You're the pastry chef at Le Bernardin. In New York, one of the most prestigious restaurants in America, I would say.
In the world?
Well, definitely.
I would say
in the world.
The busiest three Michelin star restaurant.
Oh. The busiest three Michelin star restaurant.
That's such an incredible phrase.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's kind of like just to get one star is like insane. Yeah. Getting two stars is unheard of. I don't even know any three-star restaurants, but then you're like, we're three, and we're the fucking busiest.
No, I mean, for lunch, we do...
Wait, you guys do lunch?
We do lunch, like 120, and you know, for dinner, we do like 200.
Just every day.
Covers. We're open, you know, 6 days, 5 days lunch, and 6 days dinner. So
you close on Monday?
We're closed on Sundays.
Okay.
I can't imagine the team... and the amount of bodies it takes to run an operation smoothly with that much volume at that high of a level.
I mean, July, I will be at Le Bernardin for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I remember my first year there. You know, like, it's always been a dream to work there.
Uh-huh.
And actually, like,
sure.
You know, being and working there, you know, I've always said, like, I wish I would have worked there as a cook.
Uh-huh.
So I would have understood the massive, like, how busy Le Bernardin is.
I mean,
I worked at restaurants in Chicago. It's not as busy.
Yeah.
You know, 40 covers, you're in the shit.
Yeah.
You're, like, running around, like, oh, my God. Like,
really?
It's the end of the world.
Yeah.
But, you know, I worked at L2O. They had three Michelin stars as well. When Michelin came to Chicago, it's just two restaurants that got three Michelin stars.
Uh-huh.
And, one of them is L2O. I worked there, and, you know, God, we would do 20 covers, 30 covers, if that. And that's uh-huh. that's busy.
Yeah.
You know, at Le Bernardin, first seating for dinner is 80.
Ugh.
You know.
Oh, my God.
How many seatings do you do for dinner?
There's three seatings for dinner.
And there's not
two,
a...
For lunch, we do two.
And that's not like stragglers coming in, everybody's there on
yep.
time. Like, you know. Yep.
This made their res 2 months ago.
Yeah. There's a wait list, and, you know, we're very grateful.
Planning their trip around this meal that they're about to have.
Shaking the valet's hand.
Yeah.
Thank you for the work you do. Don't scratch it.
Yeah. There's no valet in New York, you know.
You know. Come on. Okay, shaking the bathroom guy's hand. I'm sorry, the water closet attendant's hand.
Yeah.
That's what you call him over there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the elevator operator guy. Thank you for everything you do.
Do you know Eric?
Yeah.
So at La Bernardin for 4 years.
Yep, coming up on 4 years.
And for you said you do. I didn't even know they do lunch.
Yep.
I guess I've never been to La Bernardin, obviously. Yep. How different does the dessert menu go from lunch to dinner?
It's the same thing. It's the same menu. Mm-hmm. The only difference with service is that for lunch we offer a City Harvest menu, which is like a tasting menu at the lounge. For like $55.
City Harvest?
Yep. It feeds the homeless in New York City.
Okay.
And we donate $5, I believe, for every
So you
City
said
Harvest
that's a $55
menu.
Lunch tasting?
I believe.
Something like that?
So, yep. My boss might be upset.
Either
if
way.
If I get it wrong. But
paraphrase.
All,
yes.
all things considered.
In the ballpark.
Yep. It's a great deal. Three
as a
course,
value
it's,
for
it's
whatever
it's,
Le Bernardin normally costs.
Yeah, three course menu. And yeah. It goes for, it's for a good cost.
Yeah, it's great.
What does it normally cost for a dinner with wine? What are we getting out of there?
It depends on the, if you get the tasting menu, it's like 180
yeah.
plus, you know, wine pairing and mm-hmm. everything.
So the tasting menu is 180. That's not that bad for
bad,
a three star restaurant.
Yeah. You get the service.
I mean, obviously it's high as hell, but I mean, you know what? Vespertine is what? 250.
Sure.
How many stars does that motherfucker have? Zero.
Zero.
The valet is very nice, though.
The valet, no, you know.
How many courses are you getting for that?
We have a 12 course and a 7 course. You're putting me on the spot.
No. That's great.
It's okay. Don't worry.
But it's such a. This is perfect because a friend of mine just got back from Vegas, and I mean that's an example of like you said, it's not cheap, but that's. You're getting every cent of your dollar on the table.
Mm-hmm.
My friend went and he ate at, where did he eat at? Some Jose Andres restaurant in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like 10 people and it was like $410 a person. Uh-huh. And none of these people really like food or wine. But they sat down, I'm sure they got upsold on everything. Every time the sommelier came right. out and offered advice for this course, for a wine pairing, they just kind of like, I like, let me guess, everybody was glassy-eyed and just kind of nodded without saying anything because they were uncomfortable. And he's like, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And
that sounds good. Yeah, we'll take another bottle.
And I was like, what's the most you've spent before that meal? And he was like, I don't know, like $100, 150, I don't know. Nothing even close. Right. And he was like, I was like, how was he? He's like, oh, it was great, but it wasn't four times better than anything else I've ever eaten. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're in Vegas, you're in a hotel, you're eating at a celebrity restaurant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, where you're working and what you're doing, it's like everything's on the plate. And it's,
you know,
you're not paying for any of that.
Yeah,
other
not because
bullshit.
I work there, but you know, I think La Bernardin is an institution for New York. You know,
yeah,
there's Per Se, there's John George, there's La Bernardin.
Yep.
We're like the first restaurants to ever get 3 Michelin star when Michelin came to New York City.
And the consistencies.
They'll be open for 31 years now, I think, if I'm
that's
not mistaken.
Crazy.
But
yeah, that's
for
wild.
Them to uphold. The standards and to evolve with the times, you know, like as a person that work there, I'm probably one of the youngest as far as upper management goes. You know, they work there for quite a bit. I mean, it's not only a family, or you know, like as far as the staff that works there, you know, like we have a back waiter, Arturo. He's been there since like they opened in like 1986.
Speeding Gordon Gekko,
you know,
at that point.
It's crazy. You know, you know, to be a part of that and, you know, like for diners to come in and for them to see, to be a part of that. I guess there are,
I can't really think of many places that are 3 stars that would have those 3-decade-long
right.
career waiters and servers, like to get that kind of 70s, 80s, 60s, like charm of the career waiter who's just a master at
right.
what they do, a
right.
master from a busboy to a server
right.
to a bartender.
Yeah.
When you see somebody really on that level, like, holy
right.
shit, this guy or girl
yeah. knows this menu almost better than the owner of the restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, I think it attests to Magulikos is the owner and Chef Repair is the chef, and I think the way they found, like, we have the guy that runs the front, his name is Ben, and he's been there for, I think, 15 years, if I'm not mistaken. You know, he knows everybody. He's like, he's the guy, you know?
Yeah, and that's the other New York charm, is having the host who knows everyone, and everyone's got his number, and can you squeeze me in here and here? I got this guy coming in at 8 from blah, blah, blah. That kind of shit doesn't happen at these, like...
Yeah, you want Ben on the speed dial, for sure. You
know, that's the good part about the New York, like, having that, like, Balthazar host or hostess. Yeah. Like, that kind of shit is... That's like that... it's the new umami, or it's the old umami.
Right. I mean, for them to
it's
have...
It's the invisible element of a dining experience doesn't happen anymore. Like, you can't...
The front house umami.
You can't call Noma and be like, hey, you know, I got... They're like, we are booked up until August, I'm sorry. And like...
2020.
Yeah, 2020. Like,
you're like, oh, I'm going to be there in August in 6 months.
No.
Well, I think the current climate, too, of the restaurants, Noma's especially in L.A., you know, like, it's casual dining. Like, I think fine dining is... I mean, it's catching up with restaurants like Best Cuisine and other restaurants in the city. But I think it's more... a chill, casual vibe.
Yeah.
And even in New York, I think, you know, there's a lot more people that are searching out casual dining. And I think, like what I said, per se, you know, John George and La Bernardina are the only ones that are still kind of on that path of like...
Yeah. I mean, that's how LA restaurants used to be kind of, you know, back in the day. And I feel like that doesn't really happen anymore.
But it's not, you know, like, that's one of the things when I dined at La Bernardin prior to start working there. And, you know, I got the job and I ate and I observed the dining room and, you know, like, oh, my God, I can't believe I would work here. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, for me, I've always searched out chefs, you know, to work for them for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not because of, like, the name. I mean, yes, you know, like, you want to build your
resume,
but, you know, like, I've always looked for chefs that I, you know, like, I admire and, you know. And
you admire the Repair.
The Repair. I mean, he not only he's a great chef, is that the way, I mean, I always joke around that he's the nicest French guy I've ever worked for, you know.
Yeah, the French brigade system isn't known for making friends.
You know, he's
or just French people in general.
For him to also be an advocate for me as a pastry chef. You know, like he loves desserts, and you know, like he've allowed me to thrive, and I'm not
sure.
I've
seen him with his shirt off on Bourdain. He loves desserts,
but you know, like I don't know that a lot of pastry chefs out there could say that, like, confidently say that, like, you know, their chef is an advocate for them and support them and
giving you agency, giving you a chance to,
you know what I mean, like to express
your own,
I mean,
perspective, your
having
own personality.
having the venue to make the desserts that I believe in and I stand by is a blessing enough. And, you know, to have a chef that actually...
Yeah, I guess the French really do put more value in pastry than the average person. A lot of times the dessert menu can be an afterthought for a lot of restaurants.
You know, for me as a pastry chef, I think it's unfortunate to see a lot of restaurants that are, like, desserts are always kind of like, eh, you know, like...
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, for us, we take... obviously as much care as we do for anything. And
you got on this track fairly early in life.
Yep.
Like, very early. I mean, I would say unless you started cooking in your parents' restaurant at 5 years old, it doesn't get much earlier than your story.
16, yeah.
So you graduated high school at 16?
Yep. And
you went to high school here in L.A.?
Would you call yourself the Doogie Howser of pastries?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure. I mean,
you might be too young to get that reference.
Well,
also,
I do know Doogie Howser,
okay, right,
but
cool, okay,
you know,
there,
I think
there.
In
Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes,
yeah.
In Europe, I mean, a lot of chefs start at 13.
Yeah,
you know, apprenticing in restaurants.
Yeah. That's a good.
I
point.
Think in American culture, it's not really, you know, I guess 16 is pretty young.
I'm more curious about how/why you graduated high school at 16.
Yeah, did you steal a car?
What did you?
I did.
You steal a car, and then it was like a GED.
Yes.
And then, so yeah, technically, you were done at 16.
Is this a GED, or is this a real?
A real.
Did you meet repair in jail?
So I did.
That's
not.
What we're trying to get to. That's like that's how you got the job.
Why did you get upstreamed into this?
I went to I was accelerated twice.
Okay.
From 7th grade to 8th, and then
I skipped
on that. And then
you skipped a grade two times.
Man's too smart.
So seventh.
It's not that I, you know, I've.
Seventh to eighth, and then what?
Like second to third. Like
in high school.
Yeah.
Damn. Mm.
And then, you know, I, growing up in an Asian family, obviously they expect you to be either a doctor or.
I've heard this rumor.
You know? Mm-hmm. I decided to go to culinary school for. You know, like for fun. My sister got me a weekend class at the.
Your mom's still crying about it.
So that. Well, wait.
Actually, she loves that I cook now.
That's good.
You know,
she gets to eat it.
She lives in LA, but she's come to visit in LA.
She can be very proud of her son.
Mom is dying at the spot.
For the longest time, they always like look at you like, oh God, he's gonna be poor for the rest of his life. You know, for your birthday, it's Christmas. It's always like a check. It's like, oh God, you can't afford to.
but what I think is so cool is that you didn't decide to go to culinary school. From what I read, you did at some point, but you basically took a class and found out you really enjoyed it. And then at 16, in an accelerated program, then decided. What you just self-described as parents that wanted you to be a doctor or something.
Well, you know, there's the expectation of, like, you know, cooking. I didn't really view it at the time as a career.
Right.
It's more of like...
Sister just got you a class for fun? Because I always liked cooking.
I've always liked baking, cooking, and, you know, at home. And I didn't necessarily think of, like, oh, I'm going, you know, like, I didn't go to culinary school. Like, I'm going to be a chef.
Right.
You know,
a fun hobby, but not
it was a hobby.
A career
and
path.
I just decided to, like, you know, I'm gonna.
Was it scary to tell your parents what you wanted to do?
I didn't do that until like later on
because I went to a three Michelin star restaurant.
I was in culinary school and I finished it and I said, you know, like, I'm gonna try this.
They
out.
Still think you're an anesthesiologist right, you know, now, don't they?
What did they say when? So you had taken the class and that got you really excited.
It just felt natural.
Yeah,
I just. You know, I could still remember the smell of the cleaning products in the kitchen, and just being in a kitchen like,
yeah, that ammonia gets a little light.
How did that make you feel?
You know,
we're
getting therapy now. Smell memory is very big, right?
Like,
now.
No, but really, like, you know, I remember like the first day of like just being like. Not necessarily being at home, but it's like
it felt right.
It was
to
exciting.
Be...
It felt right, you know, and
I guess you're sort of, if you're an accelerated student, you're sort of. Not rebelling against that by doing something manual and physical with your labor, but kind of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been very fortunate enough that my parents took care of us. I grew up with my grandparents. My parents divorced, and I grew up with my grandparents who spoiled us too. You know, we didn't really do much physical labor.
It's grandparents' job.
But you know, growing up Filipino, you don't like you. They do everything for you. But
and you didn't get fat.
You know, I didn't get fat. Yeah,
that's tough to do.
It's the yoga.
The yoga, huh?
Yeah.
Good looking guy sitting across from me for everybody in radio land.
But,
real spell
keeps it tight.
Yeah,
yeah, but, I mean, that's a whole. You could do a whole podcast about how do you be a pastry chef and not be a fat ass. You know what I mean?
There's a better way to say that. I think we all know what you're getting at.
I always say, actually, like, they're like, oh, you know, they make a joke like, oh, you must not be a good chef because you're skinny.
Don't trust a skinny chef.
And I go back to that. Is that, well, you know, like, a fat chef's probably not working hard enough.
Damn! That's the best response.
If you think about it, you know, like...
Yeah, Michael Phelps eats 12,000 calories a day, but he's got a 10-pack.
Seriously.
He's burning it off.
I just think of Jin Yang from Silicon Valley, because you're all fat and stupid.
Yeah, you just need to be working harder.
Right. I mean, I keep busy, and, you know, I work at a busy restaurant, and I have a big team, and I try to squeeze in Bikram yoga every chance I get. And,
Bikram.
Yep.
You like the heat.
I do.
The smell.
Yep.
Smell of those human chemicals coming out.
Yeah. I started doing Bikram when I lived in Chicago. Got... 8 years ago, probably.
If you can take the heat in the kitchen, baby, you can take the heat in the yoga studio.
Can you do like handstands and crazy shit like that?
Yeah, I've been doing it for yeah, like 9 years.
Right.
9 years.
Oh,
now,
shit. I like that. Yeah. For listeners at home, he's now doing a handstand. He took his mic off and
he just wheel kicked the hat off my head just now for people that can't see.
No, but it's a good workout. It's also, I've always done it as a workout, never really thought about the meditation aspect of it because it's, you know, I.
Yeah.
It's.
Did you just do
Yeah. It's more like a, oh, yeah, I do yoga.
For listeners at home, he did. You know? He mimicked the hand jacking off.
You know, I'm doing yoga. So but, I'm meditating, but it just came in as a bonus. It helps me focus on work.
Yeah, but that's where yoga gets you. You go in for the physical, and then before, oh, wouldn't you know it? Here I am.
There you are.
Zenned out.
Zenned out,
clear.
Yeah.
Of clear mind and body.
Yeah. Working in a, you know, in a kitchen is a little intense. You're
so,
inundated with a lot of things. So.
So you grew up cooking with your grandma.
Yep, my grandmother always loved
to
cook.
Was it all Filipino food?
No, not really. I mean, I feel like my parents, we traveled a lot and exposed a lot of things. But yeah, my grandmother like baked and cooked. Mm-hmm. And
I noticed on the current list of desserts that you're serving, there's nothing really too Filipino looking on there. Do you ever?
Yeah, where's the jackfruit?
Do you ever cook Filipino inspired foods?
Not necessarily. I'm a terrible Filipino, really.
No,
I do use a lot of. We use more like Filipino ingredients: calamansi, jackfruit. We're putting in a babo rum with a jackfruit honey. On the menu soon.
Nice.
Okay.
But we use calamansi, coconut.
Is it hard to get calamansi in New York?
They actually, we get it frozen. There's like a freshly squeezed calamansi puree.
Nice. Such an incredible ingredient, too.
Yeah, it's so fragrant. You know, there's a lot of things. I mean, even if you look at the Filipino culture, it's been colonized by so many countries that it's influenced by many things. And, you know, I often question that. Like, they're like, what is it being a Filipino? Is it being Spanish or Chinese or, you know, like, there's not a distinct, Japanese people have a very distinct culture of, you know, this is
eating
Japanese
ritual,
and, you know, I think Filipino is more, I mean, there's a lot of food, Filipino foods that are very Spanish.
Yeah.
Filipino food is some of the most fucked up food in the world, man.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Coming from a guy who loves it.
Yeah. And I love it all, but
and has cooked it.
You know, when you go to Jollibee for the first time and look at the menu, you're like, what in God's name is going on here? Yeah. And even when you order it and eat it, you're like, what am I eating?
My aunt who lives in Vegas, we always often visit her, and she, like, you know, I go and visit her once in a while, and, you know, I sit on her couch, and she just feeds me, you know, breakfast, snack, then lunch, and then snack again, and then another snack, and then, like, dinner, and then, snack. You know what I mean? It's like, she's like, oh, my God, you're so skinny. Eat more. Like, why aren't you eating? Do you not like it? You know, I'm like, we just
stop going in that hot room and stretching.
Do you not love me?
She's like, oh, why aren't you eating? Why aren't you eating enough? Do you not like it? I'm like, we just ate. Like,
what's going to Vegas like for you? Are you going to restaurants?
Yep.
Or are you like, no, I don't eat in Vegas.
In Vegas, I mean, there's a lot of great restaurants.
The Britney show? You're going Blue Man Group.
What's going on?
Okay.
No Britney shows for me.
Okay.
So you will go eat in Vegas.
I mean, when I go to Vegas, I try to go to the restaurants and eat.
Do you get the plug? Do you get to make a phone call here and there and be like, yeah, you know,
I'm coming in.
Le Bernardin. Yeah. You call from the Le Bernardin house phone, so it comes up on the caller ID.
The thing. No. I mean, Vegas is not as busy as New York, where you don't have to pull strings to get reservations. So
that's true.
Anyone's shitty aunt from Iowa can get a table at any restaurant in Vegas right now.
With the Amex Platinum.
There you go.
The Amex Platinum. What are some of the essential Filipino desserts that people might not be aware of? I mean, I know of a couple, but I like the polvorone.
Yep. Those candies. One of my sous chefs now. We just promoted her as my sous chef, and she's Filipino, and she's super Filipino, and she brings me home cooked meals that she makes at home. She makes me she knows all these Filipino desserts that make it for me, because, you know, I know it as my aunt makes it, or, you know, we go to the I go to a Filipino market, and, you know. So I'm not the biggest.
Bad Filipino.
Well, I really am bad Filipino.
Am I more Filipino than you are?
It sounds like it, you know. I lived in Chicago for 8 years, and, you know, I've been to the Filipino restaurant twice.
So you're whiter than me.
I think that I'm influenced by a lot more other things, you know. that's what makes me, I guess, a bad Filipino is that, you know.
Well, I think you're just an all-American boy. I mean, also looking at your list of desserts on your menu currently, a lot. I mean, when they're very classic flavor pairings. They like the presentation when you look at them. They're like works of art that are very avant-garde and experimental and that type of three-star Michelin pastry. But when you look at the ingredients lists, they're very classic flavor pairings. Is that intentional, or is that just your vibe?
I think I've always had that that thing. You know, present something that's so familiar. We have an apple that looks like an apple, and it's that if you eat it, it tastes like apple pie or like a apple tatin.
Yeah.
Right. Brown butter. Caramelized, you know, roasted apples and apple cider.
It looks like an actual apple.
You know, I would like to look at desserts as, or if say it's a season or an ingredient, and apply techniques to that and present it in a different way. I think desserts should be delicious and tasty, and should, you know, it should bring a memory. I mean, for me, I always try to tap into certain things that I remember.
Yeah.
I think that's why cooking or
McDonald's apple pie,
making things, you know, it's so visceral because it's your flavor memories, or like you have a certain idea of how something should taste. You know,
the ratatouille effect.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like something that you remember and you try to mimic that. Like you were talking about jackfruit. We're using it for a dessert. I'm using the idea of Baba O'Rum. I mean, I still need to stay true to Le Bernardin and to the vein of the restaurant that it's a classic restaurant. But, you know, I would like to reinvent it in a different way. It doesn't look like a Baba O'Rum. You were using jackfruit. I highly doubt that they use jackfruit in France. You know, like it sort of bring a different train of thought to what is conventional, and
so then,
you know, not to reinvent the wheel and not just use like ingredients to like, you know, mustard or something on dessert just for like, oh my god, just for the wow factor.
Right.
Like, do you really want to eat that? Like, is mustard ice cream really delicious? Do you really, I mean, do you, you know?
You also have the benefit, you also have a roadmap in front of you because of the tasting menu that you kind of, you know what people are eating.
Right.
And then you know what they're going to get for dessert, as opposed to putting five things out and saying, oh, always. Well, if what you started was with this and you're going to end with that, I don't recommend that, but I also don't have any control over that. You know, you have kind of...
Yeah, but, I mean...
You have a sense and you have a movement to start with, which helps give direction.
There's already momentum in the menu.
You know the notes you want to play because you know how the symphony is going to start.
We have we have an a la carte menu as well. We offer an a la carte menu, and
but only poor people order from that.
we order.
God damn it!
There's eight desserts on the menu, and I always look at the whole menu as like a collection to offer something different. You know, like as far as technique, you know, everybody influences that dessert menu because my staff, my team, what the product that we can get. You know, like I need to make the desserts interesting so my staff is excited every time. You know, like you can't just keep doing, you know, mousse cake ice cream tuil times eight. You know, I always try to look at one thing. Okay, well, you know, for Baba we have something yeasted, laminated dough or cake, you know, like different things for each dessert, and I always try to make it as light as possible so you can have a couple of desserts or, you know, they always make fun of me that the secret ingredient is salt, because I always, like, I love salt on desserts. And
I love salt on desserts. It might be my favorite single ingredient in desserts is salt.
I'm a salt monkey, and I just keep adding
self-proclaimed salt monkey.
We need jackets, me and you.
I mean, luckily we're living in the first time in the history of the world where we're all realizing that salt on desserts makes it better.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, it's happening before our very eyes.
It always, you know, for
me. It enhances the flavor. What about MSG? Have you thought about incorporating MSG into your
not.
Desserts?
I have not.
He's like, I have not. I don't want to keep my job. Next
right.
question.
Yeah. I,
and that's, yeah.
I've been experimenting with it. That's all I'm saying.
Last week, he bought a bag of it, so that's why he's asking okay. me about it. Real excited about MSG right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a natural product. I mean, it's demonized, I think, but it is a natural product.
Yeah, a that demonized natural in, product. Maybe know, consider throwing it on the menu, and they won't be, I'm sure they won't allow that, but...
Yeah, but probably.
Yeah, don't do that.
Just experiment.
Don't ever do that.
Stay away from it.
Yeah.
Why is the Chinese restaurants, you know, like you eat certain things, like why is it so flavorful? It's the MSG. Yeah.
Why is QP better than regular mayonnaise?
MSG.
Debatable.
You know?
MSG.
I think that's the thing. Everybody just tends to like, oh, God, MSG. They don't know really anything about it, but they're like, oh, I don't like it.
You just need to have it in small doses.
Yeah.
Don't have foie gras every day.
Yeah.
You piece of shit.
Yeah.
Once a month.
Eat Kratom every day for a week. Start cooking with MSG for no reason. Yeah. And you should be good.
And it should be good.
And you should be good. And
use use it sparingly.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I guess working... when you're that type of pastry chef who does, you know, this type of artistic experimental plating and preparations, when you're working with that Le Bernardin brand and vibe over your shoulder, does that help kind of keep your blank canvas less blank and let you have a little bit of more of a constraint to create things in easier, as opposed to just like do whatever you want and go crazy where it's easier to kind of fuck things up?
I think for the longest time, you know, nobody wants to make a mistake, but I find I was having a conversation with a ceramicist yesterday, and he said that you know, the plate that he made, it's 12 years of in the making,
mm-hmm.
because all the mistakes he's made is in
there. Yeah.
And likewise, that I mean,
failure is important.
Yeah, failure is important. You know,
failure being a strong word, but yeah, sentiment.
You know, like the because you remember the things you don't do right, the things that you fuck up, you don't remember. You remember that.
Yeah, that's all I do. So
you
know,
you want to fail.
That's my wheelhouse.
You want to fail in life, not at life.
At life, yeah. You know, like as long as you learn.
I got that twisted.
I tell the interns the opening thing when I'm interviewing candidates or interns, I always tell them that, you know, it's a busy restaurant. Mistakes happen.
Yeah.
And I accept mistakes. And, you know, like, you know, I make mistakes all the time. It's, you know, what matters is what you do.
Right.
After you make the mistake.
Which is don't look at you in the face. Ever.
You know, it's true. Like,
don't cry.
No eye contact.
Don't cry. No crying. But we, it's a pretty happy team, I would like to say. I mean, everybody's, you know, everybody's like, oh, you must be crazy in the kitchen, blah, blah, blah. I never scream. I never yell. I speak quietly and clearly.
You don't seem like a screamer, I will say.
I'm more of the
Look,
quietly, make them feel every single word kind of a guy. I'm just kidding.
Passive aggression, got it.
No, it's you know, I
feel like the demeanor you're talking about, it's like 99% of that kind of insane, screaming, yelling, kind of ego-driven attitude that people assume are in restaurants. You know... With small exception, are usually coming from people that aren't in control.
It's true. And I
and when you're working at the level that you are and it's expected everybody right. where you're at.
I always believe that a person that screams is an illiterate person.
Right.
A person that can't articulate their feelings, therefore they lash out and they like, you know what I mean? Like they can't.
They're currently on cocaine or recently were on cocaine for the last 72 hours.
But
Yeah.
I mean, I think... for my cooks, you know, they know that, you know, I always tell them that your integrity, in the end of the day, flavor profiles are subjective, but what you do and the integrity of something, you know, when you make something, what right is right.
Right.
There's no gray area. If it's not right, do it again, fix it, you know.
Yeah.
You don't ever try to pass off something that is not right and try to be okay with that. And that's, for me, that's the biggest thing.
How much do you love the precision of pastry cooking versus the freestyle nature of savory cooking in terms of the specific measurements and times and weights and
I mean, you know,
temperatures,
scaling things and, you know, it creates consistency, but I always try to cook like a cook. you know, like I add salt. I had handfuls of salt because ingredients, products.
But when you add salt,
variable.
Are you weighing it out to the milligram?
Or are you sprinkling when we're creating, I mean, when we're creating a recipe, yes, we scale it out. But most of the time, I add salt. You know, and things are different every day. The products you get, are different. So
when you're recipe testing, everything's documented.
Right.
But when you're cooking,
I mean, that's the gold standard of the recipe. But you know, you also things differ from
sometimes the peaches you get
today
an apple and, that's sour,
right,
or and, more you know, sweet than the last one, and you have to adjust on
you
the fly.
Have to, you just you know you have to adjust and think.
That's how you go from 2 to 3 Michelin stars.
You know, and you always have to adapt, and that's you know I try to tell the staff my team that is that. You know, like you can't, you know, you're not a machine.
Yeah.
You're not a, you know, like you have to taste and feel and, you know, today it's this and tomorrow it's that. It's okay.
And Jason, you make a good point in that it's, you know, we're kind of getting to a point where it's ubiquitous that high level cooking is seasonal and farm to table. We all seem to know that or at least expect that. But what doesn't seem to be prevalent are people's kind of unrealistic expectations about how similar that dining experience should be from the same dish to the same dish.
Right.
Produce, proteins, everything is different from piece to piece, apple to apple, like cut to cut. And, you know, I just don't understand sometimes when people are like, yeah, this is a little different, or, you know, it's like, well, yeah, because that's what happens when you're getting things that aren't frozen, processed, and vacuum sealed from Sysco.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like everything is going to change, and it's going to be to in varying degrees unique experiences, and it's kind of the beauty of it. But yeah,
it's not kind of the beauty of it. It is the beauty of
no,
it.
No, but just that idea that somehow we expect everything to be fresh, farm to table, and seasonal. Yet we don't have any kind of.
I mean, we get the strawberries from. Here I get Harry's Berries, you know,
the best.
It's the best strawberries.
It is the best strawberry I've ever.
People like the tri-state in New York, though.
I am not
a fan.
I'm not a fan. I mean, you know, you can't compare a Harry's Berries to that. I mean, you know, you know, I harass our purveyor. You know, I literally had a conversation with him. I'm like, you know, like it's either I'm going to get the strawberries or we don't use them because if I can't get this much, then there's no point.
Yeah, strawberries are coming off the menu if I can't get
you know
this
what I mean?
I'd hate, for, I'd hate you know? For Eric to have to get a phone call about this. You know?
But the
he's
Harry's
a
base.
Late sleeper. I don't want to wake him up right now.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about the power you must wield when you're calling from Bernadette and hitting up these distributors for ingredients. Or like how you would get preferential treatment above other restaurants because of your legacy accounts over decades.
No, I'm just saying a business class ticket to Paris is going to help the chances of you selling out strawberries this week, Dave. I don't know why you're not hearing me right now. I'm speaking clearly.
To be honest, I don't know that it's the you know, that sounds a little, I never pulled out over at La Bernadette. No,
you don't have to.
I think
to.
It's just,
you don't seem like the kind of guy who would do that.
But, you know, I do just, one of my friends, it's a funny story about the Harry's Berries. She was giving me a hard time, and she's like, I tried to order Harry's Berries, and the person who was taking my order said, no, the pastry chef from La Bernadette took it all. And I go to the farmer's market during the fall time. I pick up the pears that we use. And, you know, this farmer is a little, you know, he's hippie, and he's just like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He charges me a different price every day. And, you know, I said, like, well, sir, I will be committed to you. If you're committed to me, I would like to buy all the pears for the rest of the season because this is the pears that we use and we acquire a lot.
Your hippie ass makes the best pears, unfortunately,
yes,
and I have to do business
with you. Hey, Moonbeam, are you listening? I mean? I'm forward, okay? I'm talking to you.
And then other pastry chef's like, well, the guy refuses to sell it to me because you said that, you know, it's only for you.
Yeah.
Can I have a case?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not your fault that you have such an output.
But you have to, like, you know, in New York, I think it's a point that the point of the story is that, like, it's unfortunate that New York has so much power and so much money and so much this. Like, you know, but everybody's all New York, but it must be so easy to get, you know, everything you want. And for me, living in Chicago, working with farmers directly, I was spoiled with the produce, and it's available. And you know, in New York, the demand is so much.
I mean, isn't that just New York in a nutshell? All the power and the money, but the resources have been tapped dry.
You know, like that's the thing. It's like, you know, like you would think, that you would get the best products, blah, 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 because you're this restaurant. No, actually, you have to like search it out and fight for the products you want.
So how long until you move back to LA where the produce is obviously the best?
I don't know. You know, I love visiting LA, but
you're a New York boy, aren't you?
I don't see myself living back here.
You work too much to be affected by the elements is what you're trying to tell us.
Yep.
You're like, I'm inside air conditioning or heating all the time.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I also enjoy the, you know, what I don't like about LA is that there's no season. What I love about living in the Midwest and New York
is
that
you feel. It rained for 8 minutes today.
Yeah.
Right. You know, but, it's practically, it's pretty stagnant. The weather is, it's great for most people, but I like living the seasons.
You like and a seasonal cycle.
I like to, I like to feel the, you know, I mean, with cooking, I try to keep the menu pretty seasonal. And, you know, feel that and you live it. It's
you guys got good apples up there, though.
Good apples.
I will give you that.
Apples are pretty good. Apples are pretty easy to get.
Have you been watching the Chef's Table season 4 pastry?
I have. I saw one with Will Goldfarb and Jordi Roca. Yeah.
Have you seen it, Andre?
No.
It's pretty.
I'm going to.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah. Well, Will Goldfarb. I was watching his story and his. He was talking about something that I didn't even realize or think too much about of going. He moved to Bali to start a new dessert-only restaurant after living in New York. And he now has access to the baking and pastry staples that we all known forever, like sugar and cinnamon and chocolate and vanilla and all that stuff. Like, and he's in a place where he can get all of it fresh and how much that... That's sort of like the next step in the pastry world of like, why would you just use regular sugar when I can make my own cane sugar from scratch or the cinnamon is fresh right here. I've picked it off of a tree and process it myself or...
I'm curing my own cinnamon here.
Yeah, doing that or I mean like going into the jungle and picking fresh chocolate off of the, you know, and processing that. That's sort of... Did you feel envious of his access to those ingredients?
I mean, it's a different, you know, I think most space chefs are...
Do you want to go into the jungle?
I don't. I'm not really, although I'm a jungle Asian, I probably won't, you know, I probably won't...
Let's clarify that was our guest speaking.
You know, no, I don't have any, I don't know that I could, I'm too much of a city person now, I think. Mm-hmm. But... I think pastry chefs are resourceful and you have to work with what you have. And I think that forces creativity. Yeah. And I think that's what happened there. And I find myself, I mean, we do the same thing, like with the Harris berries, there's a shortage or whatever. Yeah. We process them and, you know, we roast them in honey and it preserves it to, you know, but, I think you evolve. I think as the time goes by and using different things, using different sugars, the climate of the industry, like, a lot of people are more conscious of the sugar intake. So, I mean, we don't use that much. I try to stay away from sugar anyway.
Produce being part of your building blocks, but also things like flowers. Do you see, I mean, do you feel it's hard to get consistent flowers for what you're doing? Do you see that them change from time to time? Are you looking for different sources?
I think we try to use different types of flour, but as far as consistency, it hasn't been bad. But I mean, there is a trend of a lot of people grounding their own, you know, flour and all that stuff, which is interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, for a bakery, we don't bake our own bread at La Bernadette, but you know, for pastries.
Do you do any personal baking yourself?
Yeah, what happens, you know,
when I'm not working?
Are you too burnt to do it at home?
Yeah, because a friend of mine who is a fan, Justin, he was asking me, like, he's really into cooking and he's like a paleo kind of fitness guy, like real buff and is always interested in exploring those things. But he's super fascinated by sourdough bread and he was asking me, like, is it worth, like, learning the craft of making your sourdough at home?
Yeah.
Versus, you know,
I mean,
just going to an amazing bakery and buying it. Like, is it actually a feasible thing that a home chef can do?
Yeah.
You think so?
Because you can get a Dutch oven and bake beautiful bread. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah.
Yeah,
I can't say that I bake a lot at home in my huge New York apartment.
but I, for a lot of
a lot of pastry and baking, like, obviously there's a lot of precision and skill that goes into it, but with something like baking an amazing sourdough, there's a lot of alchemy that goes into it and, like, so many little subtle nuances that you have to do for it to be perfect. So many things that could go wrong.
Right.
I don't know.
Think you go, is it worth the investment to bake at home and make sourdough? Is that? Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, you learn every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, like, obviously first time, it's not going to be great or mm-hmm. beginner's luck. But, yeah, I think it's to build your own sourdough. I think the whole thing is kind of fascinating for people that are interested in making it.
I'm assuming like, you don't have a mother at home.
I did, and it died.
Along with
the houseplants.
Yeah. 3 stars, and you killed your starter.
I work a lot.
But, you know, I mean, also part of that question, too, it's, you know, it's not as simple as will it be better. It's also, you know, when you're doing something, spending free time. It's
right.
Like you, the first one you make is not going to be your best.
Right.
And if you don't enjoy it from the beginning, you're probably not necessarily going to enjoy it at the end.
Right.
But if you find yourself really kind of appreciating it and it becoming something
it's the journey, not the destination.
It really is. I mean, you know, cooking is, you know, like, I don't know that there's a lot of chefs that could say that we're doing this for money or whatever. You're doing this because you love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it feels natural. It doesn't mm-hmm. feel like work.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like...
Sure.
Yeah. You know, posting Instagram pictures is work for me. Like, that I dread.
Right.
You know, but, like, being in a kitchen is... Mm-hmm. I almost need it. You know, like, I always feel at home when I'm in a kitchen. I always know that it's going to be fine or, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a weird thing.
If this was an episode of Chef's Table, that would be your closing line. That was good.
Yeah.
Yep.
But we're not closing. We still have 3 more hours to go.
Okay,
yeah, this is a 4-hour podcast.
Okay, great.
Jason told you, right?
No.
No bathroom breaks.
Okay.
No. What else should we talk about, guys?
You're in town, LA specifically, even though you live in New York, for a pretty wild event.
I'm doing the James Beard Celebrity Chef Tour.
Yep.
Calmare.
So you Nancy Silverton, Michael Voltaggio.
Yep. Jen Lewis, David Lefebvre, and
walk me through what you're making.
Was it true Guy Fieri's going to help you with desserts?
No. That is not true.
I thought that was one of the reasons I wanted to check it out.
First, I want to know what you're making tonight. Then I want to know what spots you've been wanting to eat at in LA while you're visiting.
I'm making...
talk about his event, too.
No, I said first. Right. Do that and then that.
All right.
Well, I'm doing this. It's a coffee box. It's a coffee caramel.
That photo looks incredible. Everybody has to go to your Instagram this.
But the whole idea is like a mille feuille, like a thousand layers. So the whole thing...
No, what's that? Explain that.
Well...
So like the cake that has like 100 layers?
Like 100 layers. But okay. I took that idea and sort of obviously...
And it's 1,000 layers.
Like, you know, like a mille feuille.
I took that idea and this cake has 1,000 layers.
No, it doesn't have 1,000 layers.
More layers.
Doing like different layers inside the box.
Right.
And then like, you know...
this is like a two inch cube, or so, and the inside is a cake.
There's layers of mousse, citrus confit, candied nuts, feuilletine, mousse, cake, and
damn, yeah.
That's like
what was the F word that you just used?
Feuilletine, it's like a caramelized puff pastry, like flakes, like a
Did you know that?
No, I just thought that was like a French thing that I would add to my smoothies after the gym.
It's like an Ethiopian curing salt you didn't know about. Yeah, feuilletine, of course. Yeah,
feuilletine.
You don't want to use a lot, but yeah.
Feuilletine.
But it's like crispy and it's like Rice Krispies.
It can lower your estrogen levels.
Like Rice Krispies.
Yeah, it's kind of like Rice Krispies.
Hell yeah.
Like a French Rice Krispie. Okay. Yeah, so you'll painstakingly make a whole large version of this and then cut it into the cubes?
Is
each one done by hand?
Each is a chocolate. You cast chocolate into these molds, and it's a cube, and you fill it with different layers.
Oh my god!
So, yeah.
Is it? Do you have like a jeweler's loop while you're doing this? Like,
yeah, or
under a microscope.
You have gloves and tweezers, or are you working in a chilled environment? Do you have a face mask on so you don't cough on it?
No.
What's going on?
I mean, it's.
Are you just that good?
He's just that good is the answer.
Good.
I mean, it's, you know,
gentlemen.
It's what we do, and you know, and yeah.
It's not like a Navy SEAL over here. It's just a job. It's part of the job.
Yeah.
And it's sprayed with chocolate, and there'll be coffee, bourbon, foam.
I didn't ask for this, but I definitely asked for this. I really wanted to do this, but I didn't ask for this, Jason.
What is there something out there that you have not been able to master? Like, what's like the toughest? Like, what's one of the toughest things to make? You've done it all.
No, I can't say that I've done it all.
But he's done it.
You know, probably maybe the one of the weakest things that I do probably is croissants. You know, we don't have a bread program, so you know, once in a while.
I mean, croissants seem to be the most difficult thing to make ever to perfect it. You
right.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the varying degrees of it are pretty insane.
But
you're sort of happy with your croissant?
Yeah, I mean. I love taking certain things like cannelé. We have cannelé. We give cannelés for lunch.
Cannelé is really hard to make too.
It's one of my favorite things to make, and I always joke around that if there's anything I know, I might not know anything, but I know how to make cannelés because it's one of my favorite things to make.
So you have the copper mold and the beeswax.
And by the way, for your listeners, cannelé should only be baked in copper molds and beeswax.
Mm-hmm.
Anything
else is uncivilized.
Or might as well just don't wake up in the morning. That's what you're going to do.
Just kill yourself.
Yeah. Have you had the cannelé from Proof Bakery?
I have not.
Have you been to Proof Bakery?
I have not.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I'll check it out.
Pretty good. It's delicious.
I'm a huge fan of Proof.
Yeah. I went to Republic yesterday. It was quite good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think.
The Vinois Series.
I think you should go to Proof Bakery after this.
Definitely will
check it out. It's about 8 minutes away.
Yeah.
And I think it has some of the best pastries in Los Angeles. Yeah. Maybe it'll be one of the best croissants you've ever had in your life. Some people say.
I heard.
I heard.
Yeah. I'll check it out.
Great.
But yes.
Are you eating anywhere in LA as well? Any new crazy spots you're trying to check out?
No.
It's hard when you're working, right? When you're visiting and working. And
One of my good friends, Mei Lin, she's opening up a restaurant in the Arts District in a couple of months. So I'm fortunate enough that she cooks, you know.
What about Lhasa? You been to Lhasa?
I have not.
Have you heard of it?
No.
It's a Filipino restaurant here in Chinatown. It's very delicious.
Very delicious.
Yeah, you should check it out.
I will check it out.
Check it out.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, I think we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
People cannot go check you out tonight at this James Beard event.
This is coming out Saturday.
Okay.
Because this is coming out Saturday.
And our listeners don't have $300.
Yeah, you guys
and it's probably sold out.
A couple of you guys can't afford it.
There's a lot of things.
Is it sold out?
I believe so.
Let's just assume that it's sold out.
Let's assume,
And if you ever go to New York and you want to stalk him personally, go to Le Bernardin.
Yeah.
Can people look at you through a window while you're working, or is he full back of house?
I'm in the back of the house. There's no windows.
There's no window.
You could tell your server, and they will take you to the kitchen.
Oh, really?
I could come to the table.
You guys do that?
Yeah, we do.
You can tell the server, like, hey, I want a little tour of the kitchen?
Yeah. Yep.
Is it annoying when people do that?
No, it's not annoying. It's more... It's not necessarily annoying. It's more like you know, like you kind of feel like you're in the zoo, and they're just like,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So don't touch you or pick gnats out of your hair when you come to the table.
I get a lot of the how old are you and where are you from?
God damn it, that would be such a bummer. You know,
literally,
that would be
literally
such
it's
a
like
bummer.
You know what? You're the base chef
patting you on the head.
So it's like meeting your girlfriend's parents for the first time 7 times a night while you're trying to work
while they're taking a selfie with you.
Yeah,
cool.
They're belittling you while they're taking a video.
They're like, what? You're the base chef. You look so young. How old are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, bitch.
Where are you from? You know, that literally, that's always like,
that's it.
It's funny. You look so young.
Let me take a picture of me giving you noogies.
First of all, thank you.
Thank you.
I do
you
look
like now, now actually it's become just like it doesn't even bother me anymore.
That hot yoga is going to keep you young.
It's just
I mean, they can see your pores and your exfoliation is very on point. You could tell that the quality of product that you use on your skincare routine is above the norm.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
And what's your Instagram if people want to check out your beautiful desserts?
Thomas J. Raquel.
Thomas J. Raquel. Wonderful.
On Instagram.
RAQUEL?
Yep.
Cool. And you can follow me on social media at themjeans. Andre Conapar has no Instagram.
I don't.
How do you feel about that, Thomas? You're envious of that, aren't you?
Yes. A little bit.
And thestewpodcast.com is the website where all of our old episodes live, and you can check them out there. Thank you for doing this, Thomas.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Bye. Thanks, bud.
Yeah, thanks.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.